As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. It's the morning after the transfer deadline has passed for another summer and it's brought to end a truly remarkable winter.
Yes, and while usually Dan and I would dive into a brilliant specific piece on the Athletic, we're actually going to go a bit bigger today because we're going to be talking about a couple of different pieces because it's been a mad summer for the transfer window. We've had Messi, Ronaldo, Lukaku and more on the move. And we're going to be talking about the one that didn't happen, which is Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid. And that's a really interesting one. And thankfully, we've got the Athletic Spanish football correspondent joining us, don't we, Dan?
Yeah, looking forward to chatting to Dermot, a very La Liga-centric show for us today. But before we get his thoughts on everything that's going on in the mad place that is La Liga, let's talk a little bit about transfer deadline day ourselves, Flo, or as it was for me as a Villa fan, a completely normal Tuesday. Crystal Palace finally have got a goal scorer, Flo. Well, I think that's a bit harsh on Benteke. I didn't write the script there, Christian, if you are listening. I'm still a big fan of Christian Benteke, yeah, but Edouard has signed. Edouard. I've got to work on my French accent.
I think that's it. I don't know if it's a bit of panic, but obviously it hasn't quite been the start to Palace's season that I think a lot of fans would have been hoping for, because they had a pretty positive transfer window up to this point anyway before managing to get Edouard. So I think that there was maybe a little bit of worry that it was going to be a difficult few months for Vieira. And obviously when you get a younger manager in who's already a big name from his past footballing career, I think it is tricky. I mean, there's a lot of pressure and we've seen that with Arsenal and Arteta. So I think it's a really positive signing because they're definitely lacking goals and you've seen that already so far this season. They've got a solid midfield, but they really need to get some goals. So I'm excited to see him play. I'm hopeful for Palace as well because I think you want to see those managers do well. You don't want to see them crash and burn because it doesn't bode well for any other younger managers coming through. But there's a bit of patience that's required. But one of the other things that stood out for me as a QPR fan was Andre Gray joining QPR. So we've got one of the little mix wags, which I think is always exciting. Hopefully we might see some of the little mix team down at Loftus Road. I'm sure they'll, you know, love to come to Shepherd's Bush, sample the sights and sounds, go to Westfield, do some shopping. So
I want to say deadline day was relatively tame. But it probably wasn't, but I just feel because the whole transfer window has been so chaotic, maybe it felt a little quieter yesterday than it actually was. Liverpool would be one. I was surprised that they didn't really have much activity, just Konate from Leipzig through the summer. So Klopp's obviously happy with what he's got there. I thought they might come up and surprise us with something on deadline day, but they didn't, Flo.
Yeah, and it was, I know a lot of people commenting on Twitter were saying the fact that instead of signing players, they just announced about 4 or 5 contract extensions. So it was basically like contract extension deadline
tactical
day more than anything, and they needed to look busy. But I think fans can feel confident that Klopp has enough to do well. I think probably most people think it's going to be tough for them to compete with Chelsea and City for the title, and United maybe to an extent. But they're probably going to push on, do well, get into the later stages of the Champions League, and it'll still be an enjoyable season despite not bringing in any huge names.
Yeah, and I've got to say, if I was a Newcastle fan, I'd be very, very concerned. Not the deadline day their fans would have wanted, but probably the one they envisaged with Mike Ashley in charge. Just a quick plug for Monday's Athletic Football podcast, where Mark Chapman, David Ornstein and co revealed how the deal to bring Cristiano Ronaldo back to Old Trafford was done. An incredible level of detail on the show, so definitely go back and listen to that if you haven't listened to it already. And if you do want to read that article in full and so much more on The Athletic as well, you can sign up today and save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sport. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. All you got to do is go to theathletic.com/Ornstein and you'll be able to redeem that offer. Dermot, welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Really looking forward to chewing the transfer fat with you, and in particular Mbappe. Why didn't he go to Real Madrid in the end? I mean, it was crazy money considering in a year's time, pretty much they can get him for a free. Why didn't it happen in the end?
The simple answer is that PSG just wouldn't let him go. That money doesn't seem to matter that much to them. That because of the Qatar owners and because of just how rich they are, and also because how financial fair play doesn't seem to apply to them, or at least that's the view here in Spain. They were able to just say, look, we want to keep him. Everybody around Madrid was very sure that he wanted to come. Mbappe himself kept very quiet and looked happy enough while he was celebrating his goals at the weekend in the Messi debut. But yeah, the feeling here in Madrid, and if you speak to anybody around the club, is that he wanted to come. Madrid were willing to go as far as 200 million. But PSG just stuck in there and said, no way, we're not selling.
Where does that leave him next summer? Because obviously his contract's running out. And does that mean that PSG is still keen to try and lock in a contract extension? Or is it just an acceptance that they've only just got him for another year now?
No, again, it really depends who you speak to. If you speak to people in France, they say that it's all kind of part of a negotiation between Mbappe and the club, that Mbappe is playing hardball over his new contract. The story is anyway, is that they're willing to offer him a salary, even potentially more than Messi and Neymar get paid. They still want to make him the center point, I guess, of their project when Messi is long gone, and maybe when Neymar is gone as well. If you speak to people around Madrid, they're like, we've done everything we can to show Mbappe that we really want him to come here. He loves the club. I don't think anybody doubts that Mbappe was a big Madrid fan as a kid as well. You know, the pictures of him in his bedroom with Cristiano Ronaldo posters are great propaganda for Marca and for everybody, but they're also true. He was a Madrid fan. He does have a connection to the club. He's in a great position now because as his contract runs down from January or maybe even already, his people can be speaking to Madrid about what type of signing bonus he could get. They know now Madrid are desperate to get him, that they have this 200 million that they apparently were willing to spend on him. So 12 months, a long time in football. Maybe he wins the Champions League at Paris Saint-Germain. Maybe that project falls apart. Maybe Zinedine Zidane takes over as PSG manager. Who knows what's going to happen over the next 12 months. But Mbappe still gets to play for probably the most exciting team in the world and has a great chance to win the Champions League. So he's not in a bad position.
Yeah, I found that Ronaldo thing quite interesting, Flo, because people have been saying, how can he leave PSG now? Surely he wants to go and play with Messi. But if he's had Ronaldo on his wall, he's trying to get away from Messi. He's stayed Ronaldo loyal, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's a funny one because in the piece you've written about, I guess, the state of La Liga and what's maybe gone wrong for them, the whole first half is obviously laying out how most of the big clubs, Barca and Real Madrid, are in such dire straits financially, and these are all the issues. And then you're kind of like, but they're still willing to throw 200 million at Mbappe. And it just seems bizarre knowing that next summer they've got an opportunity to throw him a ridiculous contract and save themselves some of that cash, that they were still willing to put that offer out there. Do you think, and I know you touched on your piece, do you think it's so much of it is just about saving face and saving brand rather than actually about the quality on the pitch? Because Vinicius Junior is really leading the charge already for Real Madrid, and actually they've got Benzema still. Did they need Mbappe?
Yeah, like Florentino Perez It's been hurting him. You'd be pretty sure he's a very successful guy in the rest of his life. His life outside football, he's one of Spain's richest guys. He's not used to things not going his way. And it's been a series of embarrassments for him. Super League was a huge fiasco. He is angry and upset in a kind of a billionaire thwarted type of a way that the Super League didn't go ahead, that PSG and Man City and Chelsea have more money, have kind of usurped Real Madrid's place at the very top of the triangle of the of how he sees how markets work, that they have the very rich guys at the top and the money trickles down. So it became almost a source of pride for him that they needed to get Mbappe, or they needed at least to show that they would be able to get him, or that they could afford him, that they were a big club, they had the power, they had the prestige. All those kind of things are all wrapped up in what happened this summer. As the piece that's gone up on the site today lays out, like the Clásico a decade ago, when you had, you know, Messi and Ronaldo at their peaks, you had Guardiola and Mourinho on the benches, you had all these, you know, the FIFA Pro 11 every year, which is picked by the players themselves, was basically divided up between Barca and Madrid. Dani Alves, Iker Casillas, Sergio Ramos at his peak as well, Piqué, Puyol, Xavi, Iniesta, David Villa. You know, these were the very best players in the world, and they were all divided amongst Madrid and Barca. When a great player came along in the Premier League, whether it was Gareth Bale or Luis Suarez, Barca and Madrid came calling for them, and they wanted to leave. Ronaldo himself, when he was Ballon d'Or, left Manchester United to go to Madrid. That's the type of cachet that Madrid and Barca used to have. That's how Florentino still kind of sees Madrid in his own head at that stage. But reality has kind of hurt them. COVID has hit them really badly. The Bernabeu rebuilding project came along just at that time. I don't think that's a huge drain on the resources, but it just means that they can't... it's not costing them adding to their debts, if you know what I mean, but it does mean that they've less liquidity to go out and spend big. So all that's tied into what happened with Mbappe. And again, we'll come back in 12 months' time, or we'll come back tomorrow. You know, it's not like it's going to be parked away. This is going to continue. It's going to be on market front page every week for the next year, you'd be pretty sure. So, you know, there'll be plenty for us to dig into on The Athletic over that time, for sure.
Did La Liga need the Mbappe move? Because if I think, like, you've just talked about all those times, the El Clásico, you know, through seasons gone by, I would have done anything I could to make sure I'm in to watch Real Madrid, Barcelona. Now I feel like I wouldn't do that. You think about it, the stars just aren't there. Now, did La Liga need this move as much as Real Madrid wanted it?
Again, it depends on who you talk to. La Liga president Javier Tebas was very clear this summer that he would like Messi to stay, but that La Liga were not going to bend the rules. You know, they weren't going to make an exception just for Messi. He said, we lost Ronaldo, we lost Neymar, but La Liga itself is as strong as ever. His view, and what makes La Liga great, is its competitiveness. Is that not that they have two big teams who have all the best stars in the world, but that each game, each week is very good. And his view is that La Liga is getting better, that it, you know, we could have a five-way title race this season. You know, Sevilla have strengthened well, Villarreal have strengthened well. And he sees that as better than having just two big games, which in a way kind of, well, there were times when La Liga was basically decided in the Clásicos, that whoever won the two Clásicos had a great chance to win La Liga. From outside, it's hard to know whether that's true or not. I guess here in Spain, you know, if you're watching the games every week, it is great to have a more competitive league. It makes it more exciting. But for attracting more casual fans, for picking up overseas fans, for filling the stadiums as well, is in the piece. The attendance at the Bernabeu has dropped off over the last years. The lowest attendance at a game over the last, in the 21st century, was the game after Ronaldo left. This season, like something like 30%, check the figures, but it's in the piece, of Barca's season ticket holders have not renewed. There's COVID. It's 2 years since they had to do it the last time. There's different factors, but that's huge to Barca. It's a big drain on their finances as well. So short answer would be, it would have been great for La Liga if Mbappe had come. The longer answer is that they're trying to move away from that star model. But let's see where that gets them.
I suppose for the... not the thinking man, but for the purity, I guess, football fan, maybe the legacy fan, if you want to look at it in Super League terms, actually, people should be commending La Liga and Tebas, although, you know, he's a man of hilarious classic quotes and he can be a bit absurd sometimes. He's taken a sensible approach with saying to the clubs, you can't continue in this way. And if you want to have longevity for your communities, for the people you serve, for your members, etc., something's got to give. But it's just interesting how that's come at the expense of global branding and to some extent maybe quality on the pitch, although, you know, you said that there's already been some brilliant matches so far this season. So where do they go from here? Because I imagine Tebas, like he always is chatting to UEFA and saying, you know, we need a better financial fair play model because the Premier League and Liga are just taking the mick, basically. So how do they still be bold enough to say, we're going to stick our heads above the parapet and say, this can't continue in our league? But it doesn't really matter if all the other leagues are just doing what they want anyway.
For sure. Like Tebas already last night, when just as the transfer window closed, tweeted an angry tweet about how financial fair play just didn't seem to apply to Paris Saint-Germain. What he would like would be for a similar kind of salary cap system that is in La Liga to be applied all across Europe. If UEFA were to take that on, I think he'd be very proud, and it would also help La Liga a lot. Doesn't seem to be much sign of that happening for lots of different reasons. Another route that Tebas is going down is to go against the League of the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which is kind of a not headline news for most football fans, but La Liga are really angry with that court. They think that anything that they try to do, or that the authorities try to do, that the bigger clubs are able to go to cast, as we saw with Manchester City when they were supposed to be out of the Champions League but got back in. And Tebas is a lawyer himself, and he seems to think that a better regulatory structure or some kind of replacement for that, which would enable the authorities to enforce the rules or to bring in stronger rules and then enforce them, is what he would like. But again, that's getting into fans want Mbappe on the pitch. They want Barca to have a great team again. And it's a very going to the, you might be right about the Court of Arbitration for Sport. That's a conversation for another day, but it doesn't really help to get Mbappe in the short term or Barca stronger in the short term for sure. So La Liga fans are on a bit of a downer, I think it's fair to say, because of the transfer window and just the general exodus of big names over the last decade. No?
Dermot, for people like me who don't really know much about the salary cap, could you tell us how that works in La Liga?
Yeah, back in April or so, they have to submit it's 3 years of their financial figures to La Liga and projections for the future of how much money they're going to bring in and also how much money they're planning to spend. And also the historical information over the past year, so that they can't just pull figures out of the air and then say, this is what we're going to do. And the Liga then come back to them and say, okay, you can spend X amount of euros on transfer fees, wages, salary costs all around your club, plus amortizations of past transfers as well. So a couple of years ago, Barca's was huge, was up over 400 million. Then when suddenly it became clear that they had big holes in their finances, that has dropped a lot. So to come out, it's going to be like something like 150 million. You just can't break that. If you don't have the space on your salary cap to register a new player, La Liga won't let you register him, which is what we saw happen with Memphis Depay, Sergio Aguero, all these guys this summer. In the end, Barca, well, they said that they were able to register them because Piqué took a pay cut. Really, that was only part of it, that they had to sell players, Emerson, Junior Firpo, all the guys who they got rid of, the kind of squad players they got rid of this summer, was in order to bring their finances back into a better place so that La Liga would raise their salary cap so that they would be able to register those guys.
You mentioned the Real Madrid fans will obviously be disappointed that Mbappe hasn't come through the door at the Bernabeu. Camavinga has. Will that appease them in some way? Because he's a sensational young player. I know he's not a Galactico, so to speak, but what will they feel about that?
Yeah, Camavinga has been also quite often talked about in the Spanish press over the last 18 months or so. And people are quite excited about him. You know, he does look a fantastic talent. Some of the way that he carries the ball as well.
Yeah.
He looks like a great player. And Madrid do need reinforcements in midfield. You know, Kroos and Modric can't go on forever. Modric is 36 in a couple of days, I think. Kroos has a groin injury at the minute, and there's no date on when he's going to come back. So they've got Isco playing there at the moment, and nobody thinks that's a good idea, except maybe Isco himself. But so they definitely need reinforcements in midfield. The problem at Madrid is that they've signed loads of these exciting youngsters over the last decade or so. Vinicius, Odegaard, Kubo, Brahim Diaz that they brought in from Man City. All these guys were super talents, but none of them managed to break into the team. The hope is that Camavinga will be even better than they were, and also that there'll be more space for him now to come in, just because, you know, Modric is going to be moving on. you know, I don't think anybody around Madrid is disappointed that they've signed Camavinga. But as you say, it's something kind of to hope that it might come true in the future, rather than, you know, if Mbappe, you know, he comes in, they're going to be favourites for a Liga title. That Camavinga's not going to make that big an impact, obviously, straight away.
I suppose the real test and where most football fans are going to be able to assess the damage, if you like, is probably in the Champions League, is where you'll be able to see, right, how big a knock is this having. But how long do you think this reducing of La Liga's powers, I guess, on the European football stage is going to last? Do you think this could be an extended period of time in which Spanish teams are going to struggle at the top table in the Europa League and the Champions League? Or do you think someone like Mbappe arriving next summer could spark the bounce back of the division?
It doesn't look great. It's difficult to see how La Liga can compete unless there is some kind of bigger shake-up of financial fair play, or unless the Premier League broadcast deal explodes or whatever. It's difficult to see how La Liga are going to be able to compete against them. It's not really a new thing that the best players in Spain have moved away to the Premier League. Like people like Silva, Juan Bata were being picked up from Spain a decade ago. And Spanish clubs have shown remarkable, whether it's Spanish coaches or just the kind of the tradition, the culture, the infrastructure around the game, they do have done very well to punch above their weight. They're used to making the best of what they have. Barca and Madrid aren't so used to that. They're going to have to learn that maybe a bit, which is going to be difficult for them. But getting back to that layer or that spot where the Clásico is, the just overshadows all other club games in the world, where at the start of every season, Madrid and Barca are favourites for the Champions League. It's difficult to see over the short or even medium term how they get back to there.
Yeah, and just to quickly follow up as well, Monday night, Griezmann going back to Atletico from Barcelona, I suppose another sign of the issues at Barcelona. But it could be a really great season for Atletico. They have a really good chance of defending their title and doing fairly well in the Champions League, you'd probably say as well.
Yeah, I had a piece on the site last week just talking about how they had the best summer by far while Barcelona and Madrid were... Well, Barca were collapsing spectacularly and Madrid were throwing everything into the Mbappe bucket, which turned out not to work out for them. Atletico, very quietly for them, were going about their business very well. Rodrigo de Paul, key player for Argentina as they won the Copa America, comes in. He already looks an ideal player for Simeone. Simeone knows him, a fellow Argentine, really well. Also kept hold of all their best players. The last time Atletico won the league in 2014, immediately Diego Costa left for more money elsewhere. Courtois and squad players started to leave as well, and it just kind of fell apart. That team, they've rebuilt slowly and built a really strong squad. And then if you add Griezmann on top of that, they should really be favourites for the La Liga title. Champions League is also the big thing that's hanging over Simeone and Atletico. You could argue it gets more difficult every year for them, but they reached those two finals, and the way they lost them to Madrid, you know, could easily have won both of those games, or they'd argue should have won both of those games. But it will be tough for them. The last couple of seasons, they've come up against kind of reality in the Champions League, knocked out by Leipzig, and then last year against Chelsea. Chelsea were just way too strong for them. So again, having the best squad in the league and being, you know, capable of winning the La Liga title no longer means that you're capable of winning the Champions League as well. That's kind of what we've been talking about the whole time over this conversation. And that might be the situation for Atletico this year.
Yeah, plenty more to discuss on the state of La Liga. This is the Athletic Football Podcast. As I say, plenty more to discuss after the break.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
jamais. Accélération, virgule, petit pont, frappe, Kylian
Mbappé. Oh my word! The first teenage World Cup final goal since Pelé himself.
Dermot, let's just circle back to Mbappe, and you did a piece about it being 4 years in the making. Where's this obsession with him come from? What is it about him that has got Perez's juices flowing? For want of a better phrase, that's an awful phrase.
This is the Athletic late night podcast now, Dan.
What's happened there?
Things kind of came together in a way that it had to be Mbappe or anybody for Florentino. Going back a decade to when Mbappe first came to the club, they've been looking after him. They've seen what a good player he is. They've been following him very closely. Zidane was a huge fan. All along that time as well, it was always in the paper. Like, Mbappe's been on the front of Marca more times than, I know, any Madrid player over the last... since Cristiano left, I'd say Mbappe's been on the front page more than Bale or Hazard or Modric or anybody. So the Madrid fans have kind of become conditioned to think of him already as one of their players, which means that from a political point of view, missing out on him is then difficult. You know, Madrid have been saying for so long that Mbappe loves the club. It's all set up. It's going to be easy. We're going to get him. He's going to be here. And while over the last couple of years, Madrid were not spending any money, like until they signed Camavinga yesterday, the last time they had spent any money in a transfer fee was January 2020. And that was Reinier Jesus, who has never played for the team. So you have to go back to when Hazard and Jovic and Militao Mendy were signed, which is a long time ago now. So all the way through that, the talk has been, don't worry, we're not spending money today because we're getting ready for Mbappe. Mbappe's going to come and in a way solve everything. You know, there would have been a lot of pressure on Mbappe and will be a lot of pressure on Mbappe if he does end up coming next year. Meanwhile, the stadium is under construction. There's a flashy new stadium about to open, and they might be back playing in a couple of weeks, but it'll still be cranes and all over it. It won't be fully finished until next summer at the earliest. But if you have a flashy new stadium, you need flashy new big stars to play in that stadium. And Mbappe is the, just within my head for sure, and within lots of Real Madrid fans, especially the kind of senior socios who, Madrid's not a democracy, it's far from it. Florentino controls things, but he still has to keep the fans on side to an extent. So all of that is built into an obsession. We use the word a lot, and people around the club have used the word as well, that it had to be Mbappe for all those reasons. He is a great player, but there's a lot of kind of off the pitch reasons as well. Plus, he's a huge star. Like, marketing wise, it's in the piece today. If you go, obviously Ronaldo, then Messi, then Neymar are the three biggest stars in the world. If you look at their social media, Mbappe is next. Even though he's only 22, he's been around a lot less. He's had a lot less time to pick up followers than Ramos or Pique or Pogba or whoever. But he's done it. So getting that big star in was supposed to relaunch them, as we spoke about before. So all that ties together into why it was so important for Madrid to make that move for him this summer.
And you talk about that star model. I mean, Barcelona's business, crazy in a different way to what I'm used to from Barcelona. I mean, the front three of De Jong, Depay and Braithwaite, it hardly sets pulses racing, does it?
You know, over the summer, we've been doing lots of pieces on this Athletic side just about how broke Barca are. And it is... It's like that kind of, it's in a Hemingway book we used to do in one of the pieces, that you go broke gradually and then all at once. People who've been living beyond their means for a long time, old aristocrats, whoever you want, still splashing the cash, still driving the fancy car, still living in the big house, until one day the bailiffs come and take it all away, and then reality kind of sets in. And that's basically what has happened to Barca, even down to last night when the end of the window and they saw... had to loan Griezmann to Atletico, and Atletico would pay for him either next year or the following year, depending on how it works out, just to get him off the wage bill. Aix Moriba, super young player, but fell out with him over money, and he's gone to Leipzig. It's just been awful for them. What's happening at the minute around Barca is a big blame game as to... Bartomeu obviously left the club in a huge financial, awful financial state. Laporta knew that when he came in and has had... the full transfer window. He had time to prepare from last year as he was running his presidency. Then he took over as president in March. Now he's had the transfer window. It all went down to the very last minute as well. You know, even how Messi was handled, how that seemed to be all going well, and then suddenly they couldn't afford to pay for him. So people are starting to wonder about Laporta, whether he has a plan for to really fix Barca's finances, or if it's just a case that he's had to act out of desperation at the end of the window. people at Barca say it's not our fault, we inherited this situation, but maybe they could have managed it a little bit better.
So finally, before we let you go, Dermot, one of the things you've also written about is Sol Neguez, who joins an already absolutely bloated with talent Chelsea squad on loan with an option to sign, looking like around £40 million in total. Tell us about him and just how good he could be for Chelsea.
Sol is a super interesting situation over the last couple of years. He emerged on the scene as a teenager playing for Atletico from just after the season they won La Liga. And it looked like he could do everything. He could run, he could pass, he could tackle. He scored, tended to score spectacular goals in big occasions. You know, bicycle kick in the Clasico against Madrid, a Messi-like solo goal against Bayern Munich in the Champions League semi-final. Just looked like a wonderful all-around midfielder. But over time, the relationship between him and Simeone at Atletico just didn't work out. Sal wanted to play centre midfield. Simeone preferred other options in midfield. He likes players who follow his instructions, for sure. He likes players who... there's a bit of the Steven Gerrard's about Sal in a way, in that he wanted to do everything himself, be always involved in the game. And there's a bit of the Benitez's about Simeone, in that he wants them to hold the position, especially centre midfielders, that they have to mind the house. And that didn't work out. So their relationship has really suffered over the last couple of years. I think we're going to find out more about that, and I'll be writing about more about that on site over the next couple of weeks. Meanwhile, his form dipped off as well. He hasn't been scoring those spectacular goals. He was a bit part player, really, in the squad last season. Thomas Lemar was ahead of him. Then Rodrigo De Paul came in during the summer. So Sal was desperate, or desperate is a tough way of putting it, but Sal really wanted to get out of the club this summer. Atletico were very happy to get his wages off the wage bill. It went right down to the window. I think Chelsea, everybody had a look at him during the summer. It was well known amongst the top clubs in Europe that Sal was available. A lot of people had a look and decided against it, probably because of how his form has dipped off over the last couple of years. But Chelsea, maybe because they needed an extra midfielder, maybe because they feel that they can get him back, that Tuchel can re-energise him, can get back that amazing or that just all-action midfielder that he used to be. Tuchel is also somebody who's pretty good tactically and gives his players quite detailed instructions, I think, to follow. So how that relationship goes is going to be really interesting to watch. But if it all comes together, then Atletico have got a real bargain. They've got a super player, a guy who, you know, teams were bidding $100 million for a couple of years ago. And they might be able to get him next year for $40 million if they decide to go through on it. He's got 12 months to regain his form, to regain his confidence in himself as well. Was fairly badly hit by how things had gone. So could be a great move for Chelsea. Could be a difficult one for Sal to, you know, he has to kind of refocus and get sorted. But I think he'd be happy to come to London, and I think Chelsea fans should be happy to get him.
Yeah, he's fell away a little bit over the last couple of years. I don't think he made the Euro squad for Spain either. But, you know, that's a hell of a midfield four to pick two from now in Kante, Jorginho, Kovacic and Saul. That's a phenomenal midfield four, Dermot.
Yeah, and he's different than they are as well, which I guess Chelsea know, and it's something they were looking for. He has, you know, he's bigger, stronger, more athletic than their, well, Kante's pretty athletic, it's fair to say, pretty strong. But maybe it's just the impression that I have of him is that he's a little bit more chaotic than the others are. That might be something that is brings something extra to Chelsea, or something that Tuchel is looking to work on him. But, you know, Chelsea squad looked at from here, you know, we're talking about how Madrid squad has and Barca squad have fallen away and how Atletico are pretty strong. Chelsea squad is pretty spectacular and doesn't look to have too many weaknesses. And it'd be surprising if a player can go from being Atletico's sixth choice midfielder into the Chelsea team. But that's kind of just how circumstances have sorted out over the last month.
It's been great to have you on today. I feel like we've lucked out a little bit booking you for this with all the chaos that's gone on in La Liga and everything that's happened in the transfer window. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, never a dull moment here, and lovely to talk to you guys. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Rob.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Still time before we leave to point you in the direction of a few of the great stories on The Athletic. Flo, there's so much on there at the moment, isn't there? There's not enough time to read it all.
Yeah, and there were some YouTube shows as well yesterday for deadline day. So it's just there's just so much. But there is also a good piece, I think, that's come out kind of rounding up the chaos of the window. So I think that's quite a good one if you're looking for something that just to kind of gather thoughts on everything. But Saida Berahino was someone I'd completely forgot existed until he popped up at Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah. I think it was Sunday or Monday. So, yeah, there's a piece up at the moment about how Darren Moore managed to persuade him to come to Wednesday and how he turned down offers from championship clubs. That's by Nancy Frostrick and Steve Madley. So it's an interesting read, yeah.
Yeah, there's a piece on Dan James as well, which is a measly 2.5 years in the making, that transfer, not the 4 years of Mbappe. So Adam Kraft and Phil Hay, Stuart James, have got their heads together to go through the Dan James to Leeds United move. So yeah, make sure you're checking that out if you are interested. Remember, there is still that fantastic offer going on at the moment where you can pay just £3.33 a month by heading to theathletic.com/Ornstein. You'll get everything that's good on The Athletic and much, much more. So make sure you're checking that out if you're not already subscribed. Flo, it's been a pleasure, as always, to podcast with you. If you are feeling generous, listeners, then if you're enjoying the podcast, please do leave us a review and keep an eye out for tomorrow's episode. Have a great day.
The Athletic.